How do you find the mass of something, how many kilograms it is, if you can't walk over to it, pick it up and put it on a pair of mass scales? We have to do this if we're going to measure the mass of the Sun, the Moon, Jupiter, other planets, even galaxies. How do we measure that if we can't actually pick it up and put it on a pair of scales? To answer this question, please listen to this podcast. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. Okay, we're in the hunt of measuring the mass of things because we'll discover eventually a missing mass and our only clue we've ever had to something called dark matter, something we want to get to. But we can't get there in one hit. We've got to eventually get there through a whole series of small steps. So if scientists do anything, it's generally because they're pretty cluey and they've worked out equations and that type of stuff. Indeed, we have done that. So we can actually look at something from afar through your binoculars and say that weighs 110 kilograms. So it'd be nice if we could do that. You could be scanned and it could tell you your mass. But in general, we have to have that moment of truth when we stand on the bathroom scales and measure it. We measure it because our mass pulls against the gravitational field of Earth and deforms a piezoelectric crystal or some other spring. And how much it deforms that is a measure of the force. We can also measure a balanced force between us and someone else sitting on another side of a seesaw. They could measure that. Sorry. So what we're going to do is discuss how we can actually look through a telescope and measure a mass. Now, previously in the last podcast, I discussed Kepler's law, which gave you the period of orbit and the radius of orbit combined will give you an idea of the mass. So if it's very massive, it'll have a very short period. If it's less massive, if it weighs almost nothing, it'll have a very long period. So spying through your telescope, and if you've got enough time, you can actually see the separation and the time it takes to orbit. And this is all very good for things which have an orbit of a few days or even years. But if we look out into space, we can see other things like Alpha Centauri or other Alpha and Beta, Alpha Centauri, which is two stars, or actually three stars, but they are spinning around each other. And we should be able to measure the mass of that. But if we look even further out into space, we've now got these beautiful telescopes that the European Space Agency has put out, and has actually measured the exact distance to a whole series of stars by the same way that I can measure the distance with my pair of eyes. It's actually basically one telescope, but acting as a pair of eyes, moving from one side of the Earth's orbit to the other around the Sun, and using that distance parallax and a beautiful camera to work out the distance, a three-dimensional view of our galaxy. And this has picked up thousands, millions of little stars, and about half the stars out there are binary stars, they're pairs. And one of the sad things is that to scale, if I had a lolly in my hand the size of our Sun, so it's it's a scale of a trillion, around a trillion, the nearest Sun to us would be a lolly held in a city hundreds of kilometers away. So there's no way that we can resolve stars. We are beginning to build telescopes big enough to resolve very large stars about the size of our solar system. For the moment, we can't resolve stars. They're far too small. We can actually see that if they're orbiting a large distance apart, we can see them, but no matter how much you magnify them, they're still only ever a pixel. They're so far away. And so with that, we've got a problem of distance, and the orbital time. So we know the distance, and we can see the separation between two stars. We can see, work out what radius it is. It's how to work out what the period is. Now, fortunately, I'm going to tell you a few ways of measuring mass. And this is something called Doppler shift. Around each star is a chromosphere, which is emitting very distinct, pure lines of atomic lines. These atomic lines are very pure frequencies, like clocks, so to speak. And these pure frequencies come out, and we can measure shifts in these frequencies to see the speed. In fact, we can actually look at these, some of the lines, the absorption lines, and hook them up to see their frequency variation, hook them up to a radio and actually hear star quakes, actually hear noises on distant stars. Pretty amazing that we can do that. But we can also use this as a form of police radar, where the star conveniently is sending you basically a high precision clock pulse, and we can tell whether the star is racing towards you or racing away from you. Now, if it's racing away from you, the actual frequency will drop, and because the frequency drops, it's actually losing seconds as it's going away from you. And just going through that, that's actually because it's also travelling into the past. So the further away from you, the further it is into the past. And so if I have two stars orbiting each other, and say they're on the plane, orbiting on a plane which is sort of flat to us, sort of like we're watching on a racetrack and we're watching them on our flat racetrack, watching them orbit each other, but the actual plane of orbit is flat to us, the stars will definitely appear racing, one star will be running towards us while the other star is running away from us. And so we can get the two velocities, and with the two velocities go back and work out the period, the radius, and the speed at which it's going, therefore work out the mass. That's a way that we can go around and pick up the mass of things. We can also pick up the mass of the galaxy or the apparent mass of the galaxy by the speed with which stars are travelling around the galaxy. And the way we can see the speed is that from the spectrum, so we get the pinpoint of light. Generally how it works, at least in an Australian one, is that pinpoint is put down an optical fibre. That optical fibre goes up into a spectrometer, which spreads out the light, and a camera reads off every frequency of light, and it locks onto a particular frequency of light and actually can see if the star is moving towards or away from us. So a lot of stars we can see are oscillating in our galaxy. So all stars exist within a small, thin pancake layer of the galactic plane, and the stars beneath the galactic plane are bouncing upwards, and stars above the galactic plane are slowing down and dropping down. So as you could imagine, they're forming a sinusoidal oscillation as they travel through the galaxy. So if they're traveling up a little bit, they'll eventually feel the overall mass of the galactic plane and be pulled down, slow down, accelerate through, and bounce up and down. Sort of like someone jumping on a trampoline or trying to walk across a springy bed or something like that. They bounce up and down as they walk. So we can actually see not only the position of all stars, the mass of all stars, but we can also see the speed of stars. Now, what's happening is that there's some stars which have been thrown from other galaxies and are wound up here, and we are throwing stars out from our galaxy at high speed. How that happens is that a binary star will fall into a black hole, and as one star gets sucked in, the other star gets thrown out. And so there's a few stars which we can spot way, way above our galactic plane, which have had an encounter with a black hole and being thrown out, and we can see them. Although they appear stationary, they've got a horrendous, some sort of mad velocity, which means that they're going to escape our galaxy. So we can see all those types of things. So the first way of measuring a mass is by this cosmic pendulum. So it's, and we can see the stars of this oscillating and determine the local area of mass, or they're spinning around the galaxy. We can see the mass inside the galaxy, or we can see into the infrared stars orbiting very quickly around the center of our galaxy and infer the existence and the mass of black holes. So that's one way of measuring mass. Another way of measuring mass is from gravitational lensing. So mass has the effect of having gravity. Gravity bends space. Light going through the space will bend the light. And so if I imagine have a light bender in the center, and I have light going straight towards us, and light going a bit off to the left and then swing back into the center, and a bit off to the right and swing back in, I will get multiple images of a distant galaxy. Indeed, a gravitational lensing, this sort of bubbling of space, is another way of measuring mass. So we've got two ways of measuring mass: orbital, gravitational lensing. Another way of measuring mass is that light pushing out from a massive object redshifts. I don't know how much we actually do use this, but a massive object will eventually claw back light. So we can measure the redshift, gravitational redshift, from various bodies coming forward. Of course, the ultimate gravitational redshift is a black hole. It's so redshifted that the actual light never escapes from the black hole. So let's summarize again. We've got the period, gravitational lensing, gravitational redshift, and coming to the party now, we've actually got gravitational waves, which measure the mass of things. And incredibly, the actual chirp, so you can hear the birds chirping at the moment. We can actually hear bird chirps from deep space. I think we've heard seven events, including neutron stars clashing to each other. And the actual origin of the chirp, the ring up, ring down, the chirp, and the ring afterwards, tells us information of the exact mass of the two black holes which are orbiting, and the mass of the combined black hole or combined object at the end. And incredibly, as many as three solar masses of energy is lost in the emission of these gravitational waves. So these are, I'm sure there'll be other ways that we can measure mass. I suppose one of the things I'm interested in is whether taking all of this information, so there's a bit of a crossover from gravitational waves and the Kepler orbits, trying to work out what's going through there and increasing speeds and stuff like that. But the crossover I'd be interested in is that if we can hear the effect of gravitational lensing on a gravitational wave. So if we hear, and we're hearing cosmic collisions from billions of light years away. So this is not our galaxy, but things outside our galaxy. This is collisions. But if that gravitational wave reaches us, could it reach us once and twice? Can we actually hear an echo due to the distortion of space by gravity waves or by gravitational lensing? So I'm interested in that, and I'll have a look up in literature for theoretical papers on that to have a look at. But this is our medium science primer on the way to looking at dark matter. So initially we had a podcast on Kepler's law, which basically said it's the radius times the square root of the radius to give you the increase on the period. Then this one, I've given you a few more clues that, although Kepler's law is something that you would discuss at a school level, at in science level, we've got other tricks up our sleeves, namely using Doppler shifting of light coming towards us from these stars, which so far they're only ever a pixel in our most sophisticated cameras. Then we're looking at gravitational lenses, redshifts, and now we've got gravitational wave telescopes. We've got all these different ways of measuring the gravity that's out there. So we'll, on our next podcast, move on to looking at the other mass, missing mystery mass called dark matter. So that's all for this podcast. In the meantime, keep on doing science and keep on thinking scientifically. Thanks for listening.